Hi, and welcome to Guideposts. I'm your volunteer reader, Sandy Summers. Today, we return to the archives and continue reading from the October 2016 issue of Guideposts. We will begin by finishing the article we began last time, The Almost Perfect Business Plan. "Hey, Goose," I said. Jen passed her to me, and I balanced her in one arm while I made her favorite drink, the original, fresh squeezed orange juice, organic yogurt, strawberries, and banana. I let Grace push the button on the blender, and we watched the ingredients liquefy. "Juice," she said. I kissed the top of her head. The blender came to a stop, and I poured out juice for her and Jen. "How's it going?" Jen asked. "Good," I forced a smile. "Oh, before I forget, the heating bill came today," she said. $317. "Do you think that could be right?" I could barely suppress my panic. "I'll take a look." "Brito," Grace called. I went to the kitchen to get her a warm chicken burrito from the oven. I paused when I passed the door to the office. Maria had put a copy of a 1979 newspaper article about my mom and the Lithuanian food she cooked for Christmas. In the photo, my mom stood at the stove holding two-year-old me. Joe, four, stood at her side, peeking up at the pots of food. "Mom, when we first opened Anamino, I thought we were honoring her. Now I felt as though we were letting her down." I kissed Jen and Grace goodbye. The rest of the day, customers trickled in, too few and far between. That night, I sat down in the office. Rent was due, and it hurt writing out the check. Grace was already asleep by the time I locked up and got home. Jen was on the couch reading. I sat down beside her. I had to tell her. "Can we talk?" Jen closed the book and slid closer. "I don't think we're going to make it," I said. "Animo. We're out of money. I have no idea what to do. We have 3 weeks, maybe. I don't know what to say except I'm sorry. I'm so sorry." I put my head in my hands. Without a word, Jen stood and went to our bedroom. A moment later, she came out holding the single-decade amber rosary my mom had brought her from Lithuania. "Maybe we should pray," she said. "We used to pray together, just the two of us, but we hadn't since Grace was born. In fact, I hadn't really prayed since starting Animo. I always felt too overwhelmed. Besides, this restaurant was my idea, not God's. My mess to clean up, not his." Jen sat down with the rosary in her hand. I put my hand over hers. "Hail Mary, full of grace." I said the familiar words with Jen, letting her rhythm calm me. They connected me to my mom, to the generations of our family before her, to the Hill of Crosses. They connected me once again to the divine source of everything good in my life. Maybe Animo wasn't God's idea, but I had to make him a partner if there was to be any hope. The next day, before dawn, I went to Animo as usual for the morning prep. The doors opened at 7. Only one customer came in between then and 9. Some breakfast rush. Any calm I'd felt the night before evaporated. At 10 o'clock, the phone rang. It was a reporter from the Courier Post, a popular paper in South Jersey. "I'd like to write a story on you guys for the business section. Do you have any time to talk today?" she asked. "Sorry about the short notice, but I'm on deadline." Was this a joke? The business section? Why would anyone want to hear about our business unless it was an article on what not to do? "I don't know," I said. "I mean, the time the article comes out, it'll be in print in a few days. We can talk now if you're not too busy," she said. Too busy, if only. "Now is okay, I guess," I said, hoping this wouldn't be an embarrassment. "So why did you open Animo?" she fired off. I told her about my mom, our family's passion for good food, and how we believed people wanted and needed healthy organic dishes and drinks. After each question, I worried that the next one would be, "And how's business?" But she never asked. She wanted to know more about the food, which was something I could stay on for hours if she let me. In the afternoon, a photographer came by. That week, the story came out on the front page of the business section, above the fold. By the next week, sales had jumped from 500 a day to 750 a day, the amount we had originally budgeted as our break-even point. It was enough to pay the bills. We weren't out of the woods, but we had a fighting chance. We still worked 70 hours or more a week and sometimes struggled to pay ourselves, but our business kept growing. Each year, we expanded the menu and more customers came. In 2013, we opened a new location in Center City, Philadelphia. 11 years after we started Animo, we have more than 30 employees, including Will DeLeese, who is now the kitchen manager in our Philadelphia location. We just met with our team to explain options for healthcare and retirement savings plans. It felt good to know that working with us helps them support their families. Mom would be proud. There will always be difficulties and setbacks running a business, but when that happens, I remember that it's okay. It's healthy to ask for help, especially from God. Faith is what makes perseverance possible, I've learned. That would make Mom even prouder. For more on this story, see Family Room. Close calls. Captain Thomas's last hope. First, he was a prisoner of pirates. Then at home again, he became a prisoner of his fear. By Ren Thomas, Lafayette, Louisiana. This was my last hope, my only hope. For 2 years, I'd battled the nightmares, the panic attacks, the crushing fear that kept me hostage in my own home. I tried everything to get my life back, meds, therapy, prayer. Nothing helped. When I came across the website for Tom Tackett, a Vietnam veteran who trained service dogs for people with PTSD, and he turned out to have a potential match for me, it seemed like an answer from God at long last, an answer I desperately prayed for. That's why I'd white-knuckled it all the way to Tom's place in California. I was here to meet a service dog in training, Bo, a 17-month-old, 70-pound German Rottweiler. If he and I clicked, Tom would spend the next 4 weeks fine-tuning Bo's training to my particular needs. That day last September, we were out in Tom's yard getting acquainted, or trying to. Physically, Bo and I were a good match, both of us big and tall and barrel-chested. But so far, he hadn't warmed up to me. I gave his black and tan head a friendly ruffle. He pulled away. "You can't treat a service dog like that when he doesn't know you," Tom said. "To him, that's a sign of aggression. He doesn't know how to respond." Bo retreated about as far from me as he could get while still watching me, as if he was assessing a threat. "Here, boy," I coaxed. "It's okay." The dog stayed put. "Do you think there's any chance Bo and I are going to be a match?" I asked Tom. "Honestly, it's not looking good," he said, then paused. "I have to run some errands. I'll only be gone a couple of hours. You stay here with Bo. Let's see how it goes." I slumped in a long chair and gazed around, remembering how awesome it once felt to command a 220-foot commercial vessel off the coast of Nigeria. There was nothing like being out on a ship, the freedom and independence of the high seas. I'd put in 28 years in the oil industry, working my way up from deckhand to captain. The last 5 years, I'd delivered supplies, food, and equipment for an American company, Edison Chowsett Offshore, to the massive oil rigs that dotted the waters off West Africa. I loved my job. The six-figure income, the chance to run my own show, the 12 guys on my crew. I did 60 days on, 30 days off, time I spent with my wife and stepdaughter. Everything was going really well. That all changed on October 23rd, 2013. Pounding on my cabin door woke me at 3 o'clock in the morning. "Pirates," my chief officer yelled. There were 6 of them, men in their 20s and 30s, wild-eyed, armed to the teeth. Guns were prohibited on board. We had no way to defend ourselves. They released the crew, all Nigerian, and forced me and the chief engineer, also American, to a waiting powerboat. On the mainland, more pirates converged on us. They shoved my engineer and me into a makeshift shelter. More than a dozen gun-toting pirates crammed into the same 12-by-18-foot space to make sure we didn't escape. They blasted music from their cell phones nonstop, a bizarre mashup of Dolly Parton, 50 Cent, and Christian rock. They were always jacked up on something, booze, pot, crack, who knows what else. They demanded a ransom of $2 million from our employer, negotiating daily over satellite phone. The U.S. negotiators offered $30,000. $30,000, really? All I could do was pray. I prayed for my rescue, for my family, for my engineer and his family. I even prayed for the pirates. One of them had a Bible. I tried to draw strength from its pages, but found myself drawn to the dark verses in Revelation. As the days dragged by, the pirates got angrier, more volatile. Hope deserted me. I would never see my wife or kids again. The end was near. Now from my lawn chair, I looked across the yard at Beau. "That's why I'm so messed up," I said, as if he could tell what I'd been thinking. "Why I need you." I held out my hand. He lifted his head, eyeing me, but didn't move from his spot. I dropped my hand, sighing. Finally, on the 18th day, an agreement was reached on the ransom. I was never told the amount. We were released and taken to a hotel. I called my wife, but I was so emotional I could barely get a sentence out. My engineer and I shared a room. Neither of us could bear to be alone. Still, I didn't sleep a wink. I went home to my wife in Illinois. I figured I'd go back to work after a few weeks at my company's stateside office. Then the nightmare started. I couldn't be around crowds without getting panicky. More than once, I left a cart filled with groceries in the store and fled to my car. I couldn't shake the feeling that I was a target, that something terrible was about to happen to me. I went to a psychiatrist. He diagnosed me with PTSD and prescribed medication, but the side effects, severe headaches and tremors, were so bad I had to stop. Even my wife couldn't comfort me, or maybe I just wouldn't let her. Our marriage fell apart. We separated 7 months after I came home. I moved to Texas, then Louisiana, where my kids from my first marriage lived. There was no escape from my terror. It wasn't just crowds at the mall or the movies. At the gym, the clang of weights made me jump. Even at church, someone waving their arms or shouting praise would trigger me. I holed up in my house, emerging only to go to the closest gas station and grocery store and only at off hours. I'd gone from being a prisoner of pirates to a prisoner of my fear. If this was what my life was reduced to, what was the purpose of going on? Twice I swallowed a fistful of tranquilizers, hoping to end it all. It only gave me migraines. As a last resort, I searched the internet for alternative treatments for PTSD. I came across Tom Tackett's site. He had been a trainer for more than 30 years and specialized in service dogs for people with PTSD. He had a dog available, a Rottweiler, who sounded like a good fit for me. For the first time since my kidnapping, I felt a glimmer of hope. Then Tom mentioned the cost, $20,000. I told him I didn't have that kind of money and likely never would. My only income now was Social Security disability payments. I didn't expect to hear from Tom again. Out of the blue, in July 2015, he called. "I told your story to a woman I know, and she wants to pay for your service dog," he said. "No one does that, ever." That had to be a sign that the Lord meant the dog to be mine. I was so convinced of it that I made myself leave the safety of my house and go all the way to California. But now Beau wanted nothing to do with me. "Lord, I trusted you. Don't you see I'm hurting?" Tilting my head back, I stared up at the sky. That's when I felt something rubbing against my legs. Beau. I hadn't even heard him padding across the grass. "No sudden movements," I reminded myself. "Let him get to know you." I carefully reached down and scratched him behind the ears. He pressed his head into my hand. I moved my hand down and stroked his neck. The next thing I knew, he'd climbed up onto my lap, all 70 pounds of him, and was licking my face. I wrapped my arms around him and loved on him right back. "Good boy," I whispered. That's how Tom found us when he returned from his errands. "What happened?" he asked. "It wasn't anything I did," I said. "It was Beau. Somehow he just knew how much I needed him." A month later, I returned to California for Beau's final week of training, teaching him to watch my back in crowded situations. This time we worked together perfectly. Beau graduated on October 23rd. "Congratulations to you both," Tom said. "You know, there's another reason today is a special day. It's Beau's birthday." It took a moment to sink in. October 23rd. Beau had come into the world the very day I'd been taken hostage. We'd been meant for each other from the beginning. Back home in Louisiana with Beau, I was a changed man. If it got crowded at a grocery store, he stood behind me, pressing his body against my legs, letting me know he was there and my anxiety would subside. I started going to the gym and the movies again. At night, Beau slept right in bed with me. waking me whenever I had a nightmare, then nuzzling me until I fell back asleep. But not even a month after I brought him home, Bo got sick, really sick. He couldn't keep any food down and lost 10 pounds before a veterinary specialist discovered the cause of his problem, two rare intestinal diseases. There are medications he can take, the vet said, but these diseases are progressive. It's hard to give a hopeful prognosis. I gave Bo his medication and fed him the special diet the vet recommended. I sat with him and loved on him, stroking his fur, holding him tight. I prayed for healing, praying as hard as I've ever prayed. I'm right here with you, I told him, no matter what. Maybe Bo's prognosis wasn't hopeful, but I was. I learned that just when you might think, all hope is lost, that is when God moves. Day by day, Bo got better. Today, he's back at a healthy weight, and I live with a new sense of purpose, to take care of him with unfailing devotion, just as he takes care of me, just as we were brought together to do. For more on this story, see Family Room. I'm Sandy Summers, and you're listening to Guideposts on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour reading and information service for people who can't read print due to a disability. If you missed any part of this program, you may access it anytime on demand at www.sunsounds.org. In addition to the bi-monthly Guidepost magazine, each week we may be reading some of Guidepost's other daily devotions or inspiring stories from Guideposts online. Family Room. Meet the people in our pages. Prayer got me out of the jungles of Nigeria alive, and it gave me Bo, says Ren Thomas, Captain Thomas's Last Hope, page 62. Ren got Bo, a Rottweiler, through Tackett Service Dogs, with the help of a donor, Sally Pasco. Tom Tackett and Sally are restoring my faith in humanity, Ren says. Tom, the founder of Tackett Service Dogs, helped Ren with Bo's medical bills. Sally donated the $20,000 fee for Bo's training without ever having met Ren. In Pirates, A Captain's Nightmare, due in bookstores in 2017, Ren tells the story of his kidnapping and his recovery from post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm still not healed. It's a hard thing to shake, he says. But with therapy, medication, prayer, and Bo, I'm doing a lot better. Not only do Sunny Jeffers, What Prayer Can Do, page 68, and her husband have a locksmithing business, Sunny's also an accomplished writer. She wrote The Sounding Joy, part of the Christmas Miracles of Marble Cove four novella set, which tells the stories of four friends, Diane, Shelley, Margaret, and Beverly, in a little town in Maine, working together to renew their community's living nativity tradition. It was great fun brainstorming with the other authors and our editor, Sunny says. Each heroine receives a mysterious Christmas-related item that leads her to uncover family secrets and spiritual healing. Ready to escape to Maine for Christmas? The set is available at guidepost.org/Christmas Miracles. Morgan Wagner, Heart of a Champion, page 50, and her horse Endo have come far since his eyes were removed. In summer 2015, Endo got a role in The Knight's Mare at Caravan Farm Theater in Armstrong, British Columbia. The producers liked Horse and Rider so much that they wrote a part for Morgan, too. This summer, Morgan and Endo traveled to perform at the Briarfest Carnival in Lexington, Kentucky. Morgan posts videos and answers questions on the Endo the Blind page of Facebook. She hopes sharing their story will encourage others going through difficulties, especially if an animal needs help. Animals are very adaptive, Morgan says. If owners take proper care, animals can live a good life after an injury. Guidepost Impact. Comfort kits open up conversations with the young patients I see. The coloring books and Sparkle the Star bring comfort and a smile. Chaplain Kimberly Merman, Cardin Children's Medical Center, Mesa, Arizona. For more information on Guidepost's outreach programs, visit guidepostfoundation.org or write to Guidepost Foundation, 3908 Old Ridgebury Road, Suite 2AB, Danbury, Connecticut, 06810, or email us at outreach@guideposts.org. Elizabeth Vargas, Hiding in Plain Sight, page 30, is an Emmy Award-winning reporter. But as a child, she felt a different calling. I very seriously thought I was going to be a nun, Elizabeth says. My parents were pleased, but I think they knew it might just be a phase. In May 2015, Elizabeth was elected to the board of the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse. This organization fights every day against a disease that is very close to my heart, says Elizabeth. She's also lending her voice to substance abuse awareness with her book, Between Breaths, a memoir of panic and addiction. I've spent my life telling other people's stories. This is mine, and it's incredibly personal, she says. Between Breaths is in bookstores now. Animo keeps growing. Anthony Gentilsack, The Almost Perfect Business Plan, page 56, and his brother checked out options for a third location over the summer, says Anthony's wife, Jen. She says that they've held on to the newspaper article that helped turn the business around. Jen, a 2000 Guidepost Writers Workshop contest winner, is working on an Animo cookbook with recipes and stories from the past 10 years. Follow Jen's blog at runningtshermama.blogspot.com for updates. That's runningtshermama.blogspot.com. Continued, how a story made a difference. Follow us. I am disabled. There are many days I can't leave the house, so I use Faith's book to stay connected. One day I noticed that a friend follows guideposts. I'd read the magazine at a neighbor's, so I too clicked follow. Now I read everything that's posted. I like the blogs from Michelle Cox, Julia Attaway, and Diana Aiden. I feel like they understand all kinds of people. The Bible verses and inspirational quotes are always uplifting. I find that even in stories about hardship, there's something positive. No one dwells on the negative parts of their lives. I had a busy life before becoming disabled, and it has been hard to adjust to the changes. On good days and bad, scrolling through Guideposts' Facebook page never fails to make my day better. Vicki Corey, Franklinton, North Carolina. International Relations. I read guideposts every month and then pass the issues to my daughter, Marcia. After she read Alison Churchill's December 2014 Someone Cares story about postcrossing.com, a website that coordinates an international postcard exchange, Marcia immediately signed up. We both enjoy traveling and collecting postcards, which we keep in scrapbooks. But Marcia's also a junior high school social studies teacher. She realized she could incorporate post-crossing into her world history class. Her students send and receive postcards from all around the world. Interacting with people of various cultures gives them a different, more global perspective on the lessons. It helps them learn geography, too. In the future, there will be fewer written records of interpersonal communication. Emails and texts are deleted so easily. My daughter's students will have a tangible way to remember their conversations with friends far away, thanks to post-crossing and guideposts. Dolores Erickson, Hollidaysburg, Pennsylvania. Like us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/guideposts. Now we will read from Guideposts Online. The Beauty of Stillness. The Beauty of Stillness by Sabra Ciccinelli, Senior Editor. I had a long week and was finally driving home, mentally sorting through everything I still had to do, dinner, laundry, and a few overdue errands. My mind was already on the next 10 things before I even pulled into the driveway. Then I saw it, a turtle, a beautiful painted turtle, sitting at the edge of our quiet country road. That road hardly gets any traffic, especially in the evening. But there it was, completely still, waiting. I slowed down and pulled over. The turtle wasn't rushing. It was just there, calm and present. And I took a deep breath for the first time all day. I sat watching the turtle inch across the pavement and disappear into the grass. It only lasted a few minutes, but that peaceful pause stayed with me. A challenging part of faith can be trusting God's pace, slowing down enough to notice the beautiful things we may be rushing by. I hope this newsletter helps you slow down, take a breath, and trust that you're right where you need to be, even if it doesn't feel like it yet. Life isn't always about moving towards something else. Sometimes it's about seeing that God meets you right where you are. Blessings to you. Sabra Ciccinelli, Senior Editor. That's all the time we have today for Guidepost. Thank you for listening. My name is Sandy Summers. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.